My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan on his iPhone.
This is Eric.
Eric, you had some technical difficulties. I guess the power went off or something for a little bit?
Yeah, my area, for some reason, I don't get major prolonged power outages, but I get frequent short power outages. So I had one that lasted 5 seconds, just long enough to F up all my electronics. And now, for some reason, my audio interface isn't working correctly, and I didn't have enough time to get it figured out before we started.
Fair enough. These things do happen. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm okay. I'm repenting.
As you should be.
Yes, yes. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, it's Abe here.
Abe, how's it going?
I'm just weathering the storm.
Excellent. We do have one other co-host who will be joining us a little later from now. She got stuck at work. Her name is Christy Christy, who is a Connecticut American, and she will be joining us shortly. Before we get into our topic tonight, Eric, we do have a website.
Yes, we do. It is at www.darkdiscussions.com. You can go there and find a whole bunch of different things. On the right-hand side of the front page, you can find links to friends of the podcast, so you can check out all of them. At the top of the page, you can find a link to our article section, where there are articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section where you can find every episode of Dark Discussion, as well as any of its spinoff podcasts available to download for free. So you're bound to find something that interests you there. You can check that out. And front and center on the front page, you can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially support your online artists. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay things like server fees, web hosting, equipment failure, rentals for movies, and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. Go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to pick a topic for us to possibly do an episode on. We take all the choices from our patrons, and we draw one at random on a quarterly basis to do an episode on. So you can find that at patreon.com/darkdiscussions or go to the link on the front page.
That's right. And for folks who are curious, we have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us anything you want, where we will read your email on the podcast. Also,
careful there, Phil. Not anything they want. No dick pics.
That's true. We prefer genre-related things. So if there's a video game, horror video game, action video game, TV series, a book, a movie, or just want to give feedback to our episodes or your own opinion on any of the topics we discuss, just email us over at darkdiscussions@aol.com. We also have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group where you can join the discussion. There's a lot of discussion going on there about various things related to genre. We do have a Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, where you can follow us, and the new episodes are announced. And so you'll get pinged that it is available. And for folks who are new to the podcast, who've never heard of us and just trying us out, what we do, we basically talk about genre films. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, foreign type films, and all that type of stuff. So basically talking about films that generally deserve intelligence. So as the phrase goes, I guess, actually I forgot the phrase, doesn't matter, I guess. I got that.
It's our catchphrase. What is it? You deserve some food today. No.
We talk about a genre that deserves intelligence. I forget. I can't remember it. I went blank. Anyway.
Who are you going to fax? No, that's not it.
Anyway, that was a screw up. But either way, that's what we do. So we basically critique and review. So basically talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. There, I got it.
There you go.
Yay.
For folks who are interested, such as some of our listeners like Pam, we are recording this on May 28th, 2020, which is at 7:42 PM on Eastern Standard Time. It's basically the same day we released episode 438 of the podcast, which was We Summon the Darkness. So check that out. Also, that means we're getting closer to the 450 episode, where we will do a special episode, basically one of the tentpole films. So that'll be in approximately 12 weeks, at least from when we're recording this. Now, let's see. That's all I got. So anything else anybody want to bring up before we get into our topic tonight? Anyone? All right. I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Eric, what do everybody know we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about a movie that has just been press released to video on demand services called The Lodge.
So, how would you feel about going to the mountains for Christmas with Grace? She really wants to get to know you guys.
That's our mom's hat.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You okay? I don't want to leave you here with the kids if you're not feeling up to it.
I'm feeling fine. It was my idea, and it took a couple days. I can do a couple days.
Okay, guys, I'm off. Have fun.
What is that?
It's Grace.
Everyone committed suicide except for her.
Repent, and you will find salvation.
Guys! Things are very uncomfortable between us. We're stuck in a house together. What is this? The power's out. Where are my things? It makes no sense. What? I heard something.
Repent. Repent your sins.
Hello? Did you do that?
We didn't do anything.
We're leaving.
What are you talking about? Look outside. We're stuck here.
Please help me. okay. Trust me. You have nothing to be scared about.
That's right. The Lodge is technically a 2019 film because it did the festival circuits, but it's a 2020 film. It was released everywhere within the past month, including Blu-ray. As Eric said, VOD rental or purchase, but you also can watch it free at the moment if you are a member of Hulu, because it's available there. And that's where I actually watched it. I decided to do my 1 month free trial and got to watch the film. The film is directed by Austrian folk, Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala. They're probably best known for Good Night Mummy, which is a horror film that came out in 2013. A lot of folks thought that was a pretty interesting or good film, though I was kind of had some issues with it myself, but I'm in the minority, I think. The film stars a number of known faces, or at least two anyway. Riley Keough, who is the granddaughter of Elvis Presley. She actually has been one of those actresses that are on the brink of superstardom. She keeps on being the one of the handful of three or four actresses that everybody says could break out. Maybe this role will be the one we'll discuss. Also, Jaden Martell, who's probably well known for Knives Out, It, Defending Jacob, the TV show on Apple Plus, among other things. He's a 17-year-old actor. And the other members of the cast are Leah McHugh, Alyssa Silverstone, and Richard Armitage. The film was written by Sergio Cassi, with some rewrites by Veronica Franz and Severin Fiala, and it was filmed in the great province of Quebec in Canada. And that's all I got.
Oh, don't feed Sean Fox's ego, man. We don't need to.
Well, he's not.
Don't. It's Canadian, man. It's all connected.
Oh, no. Quebec is our... No. Hell no. So,
Canadian.
Yeah. Anyway, the film is getting pretty good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and was one of those highly anticipated films. A lot of people were saying about horror films that were coming out. This one was always mentioned as one of them. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And I guess I'll start. I haven't started for a while. I heard about this film basically from those lists. And we actually even may have mentioned it in our 2020 what we are looking forward to episode earlier in the year. I can't remember. But it was just one of those films that I heard was coming. I had no idea who starred in it or what it was about or anything like that. I didn't know the directors or anything, so I literally went in blind this past evening, yesterday, and I was surprised that Riley Q was in it and Jaden Martell and all that. I had no idea what it was going to be about. And I have to say that I felt this was possibly the best horror film I've seen this year. This is easily going to be in the top five for me. I loved how it made us wonder which way it was going to go, if it was going to be supernatural or real life or various other things. It was a fantastic movie and much better than Good Night Mummy. A high recommend, with one exception. It is a slow burn. So for folks who are looking for kinetic craziness grindhouse, this is not the film. But otherwise, that's all I got. So we'll go with you, Mike.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I just finished watching it a few minutes ago. I wasn't thrilled with it. I didn't dislike it. I think it does a great job with mood and atmosphere. But it is about an hour and 47 minutes or so.
That's correct.
Of slow burn, and I don't, for me, I don't think it really pays off big enough for an hour 47 minute slow burn. You do get questions as to what's going on at some point, but I don't know that they went as far with it as I kind of would have liked for what's invested in it. It's well crafted. I just think that the payoff was better in Goodnight Mommy. They kind of sort of dip in their toes in the same well with Goodnight Mommy, although maybe that's part of the, for lack of a better term, part of the in-joke. But if there's an in-joke, there's really no tongue-in-cheek in this because it's a very serious film, a very earnest film. So, and it kind of maintains that tone throughout. And I think that is where, if I have to take an issue with it, I would. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm certainly not saying I wouldn't recommend it. I'm just saying I might have been hoping for something a little bit more. I think it's an okay movie. But I certainly don't take issue because it is well-crafted. I don't take issue with those who did enjoy it more than I did.
All right, very good. Eric?
I'm somewhere in between Mike and Phil. I think it's a very well-crafted movie, and I am almost 100% sure that the directors ended up with exactly what they wanted because everything seems so well-crafted and deliberate. It is a slow burn. I had a little trouble finding the horror of it. I didn't really feel like this was a horror movie. It didn't really thrill me or scare me. I feel it's more of a dark drama. And it starts out as kind of a family drama, and I was really enjoying that part of the movie, kind of more than what comes later. Stepping back watching it, I can see one fairly major issue I have with the plot, but we'll talk about that after the spoiler flag. I do think that this movie is one that you should not be spoiled on before you go into it, so pay attention to the spoiler flag, because I recommend going in unspoiled. But I think it's a very well-made movie that I think may be misclassified genre-wise the way it's being advertised, but I thought it was pretty good.
All right, very good. And Abe?
So I heard about this film way back when it was being, you know, the trailers were still circulating in theaters and it was being advertised on, you know, as a major release. And it's only like, it was, I think, what was it, February came out finally here?
It came out, I think, on disc in February, but didn't come on VOD until a month and a half later.
Yeah, so it was fairly recent that we finally got made available to us, especially since we also were planning to do it earlier, but we had to delay it for all the episodes and stuff like that. I just watched it today, so keep everything fresh. And I'm kind of mixed on the film. I think it's beautifully shot. I think there's some really nice atmosphere, some good shots. I love the very somber and very unsettling soundtrack. It's very subtle, but it's kind of eerie. Kind of really helps with the sense of isolation that they try to present. Raleigh Keough, who plays our lead character, I thought she really knocked it out of the park, as did the two kids, who did a really good job. It's basically them for almost all of the film. It's a cast of three for this main performance of this narrative, and you know, I think everyone does a pretty good job. I think with Eric, I found the family drama parts to be very stronger than most of the other elements. I actually found myself more uncomfortable with those moments than any of the spooky weird stuff that happens later. Which is kind of how I felt similarly, with some exceptions here and there, with Hereditary, where I found the moments between the family and the drama that unfolds with them to be very more comfortable than any of the weird spooky shit that happens. It's a slow burn, so it's definitely for everybody, and it takes a while before anything really major kicks off that might keep the average viewer's attention. But I could still recommend it to a number of people. It's just you had to go in without knowing, you know, anything of the plot line, because it does, this film does rely on you not really knowing what's going to unfold. And also just to know that this is, you know, that this is more of a psychological drama or thriller than it is anything really horror related. There's only a few things horror here and there, but it's more focused on psychology of our main character and some themes of Christianity and faith. Still, this was an interesting watch. I'm not sure where it'll rank in terms of all the films that came out this year, but it still was an interesting watch, and it's interesting to also dissect it and discuss it.
All right, very good. And Chrissy mentioned to me that she thought this was an awesome film as well, so she'll be similar to my thoughts when she joins. Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. All right. A soon-to-be stepmom is snowed in with her fiancé's two children at a remote holiday village? Okay. Just as relations begin to thaw between the trio, some strange and frightening events take place.
All right. Besides the village, or it should just say
no village. There's
it
no
should
village.
Say lodge. It should just be lodge, because that's what the name of the film, right? So yeah, yes. But otherwise, that was a good. That's a good one, I think. Wiki. It doesn't tell you anything about the backstory of the future stepmom, and it doesn't talk about spoilers. So that's a pretty good IMDb. Otherwise, I think. What about your thoughts, Eric? You think?
Pretty decent.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we can get into a discussion of things that aren't spoiler related, but just general in film. First of all, Riley Keough was awesome in this film, I thought.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So she's someone to look out for, and this may be the role finally to break out and let her get to leading lady roles. I like Abe's interesting comparison to Hereditary, because it is in the same vein, I felt, as Hereditary and the Vivitch slow burn type films. So I would figure folks who would like those type of films would actually like this film. But I don't know. What's your thoughts? Anyone?
I think there's a difference, and the difference is that those other films kick a little more of a punch at the end than this one did.
Yeah, there's certainly, and I think there's also certain moments in those both of those films that are like a midway gut punch. If you've seen those films, you know what I'm talking about, especially like Hereditary. But yeah, it takes a while before any real major like.
Well, what about the first 7 minutes? What happens to...
It's a great kickoff point.
The problem is it's the kickoff. It's the kickoff, right? And then it maintains for a while, right? I mean, you have the telephone thing, phone pole thing in Hereditary. And I think the way that that film is edited, and I think the way that The Witch is edited, there's a pacing to it where it does start slower, but I do think it builds up and you get to a very frenetic pace, I think, by the time you get to the end of Hereditary.
Yeah, the kickoff of this film is very strong, but it's there for a while, but then it kind of peters out until we get into the more slow burn part where, you know, the main actual plot line starts going. And
You were done.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was.
I was just going to say, I think there's another thing too, but I don't want to talk about it before spoilers.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. It's interesting. The ending, I don't know. I felt this ending was a huge shocker personally, but I don't know. I mean, obviously it wasn't as kinetically crazy as Hereditary, but supernaturally crazy, like a woman floating in the forest in the Vitch, well, but. Yeah, go on, Eric.
And that was going to be my point, since you went ahead and said it, is that those other films have a supernatural element, and this one does not.
That's part of it. I think See, I think once I figured out the twist, it wasn't that hard to kind of see where it's going. Maybe I didn't see one specific thing that happened at the end necessarily. But everything kind of plays out very matter-of-factly. And I don't think I didn't get really, and this could just be where my head is at. It might not be the film, and I'll admit to that. I didn't get like a whole lot of, I got a lot of kind of tension and suspense through some of it, a creepy feeling, but nothing shocked me. Nothing really disturbed me for the most part in the film. I just got right. a good mm-hmm. feeling of dread and tension through it, which is fine, but it never to me went someplace with it. And my brain went to probably more places than I think, you know, I kind of went, oh shit, something's going to happen now or not, you know?
Because I was feeling that way too, especially when, as I said, the drama between Grace and the kids was, had some really nice moments that I thought was going to get a little more, you know, a little more heavy as it went along. But it, you know, it never really topped anything like in the dinner scene in Hereditary, for example. You know,
well,
you're squirming in your seat just from how the people interact with each other.
One more thing I want to hit, and then I really want to get up the spoiler flag so we can start to really talk. Is that just, I think this film was gorgeously filmed. There are some shots that are just amazingly beautiful. Like some ones that really stood out to me towards the beginning of the film were a shot through a frosted glass window, shot of balloons going up into the air. And just all throughout the movie, there's some slow moving language shots that are just gorgeous. And I really enjoyed the cinematography in this movie.
I'll also say that Jaden Martell, it was an interesting casting here because he's playing kind of like a psychopath, sociopath in Defending Jacob. And here he's kind of playing the same role. And so I felt that that was a good performance too. And I think that's why I think this film really worked for me is because to find out who is the antagonist, who's the protagonist, who becomes the antagonist because of things that are done by other
people.
Characters. Yeah. It was brilliant.
And this is why we need the spoiler flag up.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, by the way, if I had to guess, and I could dispute the sociopath thing, but I think
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Well, I didn't beat him.
but there's, you know, I think there's been three characters in the 400 episodes of the Dark Discussion podcast that you haven't called sociopaths, but you have a thing for sociopaths and you have a thing.
Well, you're a sociopath,
and you have a thing for. I mean, I would never deny that. And you have a thing for cults, you know, for those films. So I think this really plays into your into your wheelhouse.
Yes, yeah, that's true. This is a my wheelhouse type of film. That's for sure. All right, so yeah, Eric, you want to throw up the spoiler alert? So I guess we will throw up the spoiler alert. That makes sense. We will talk about anything. Yeah, go on, Eric.
I was just going to say, I think we all recommend the movie on different levels. So definitely check it out, but we're going to go into plot details from here on forward, so I would recommend watching the movie before listening to the rest of this.
This is definitely a film, I don't want to, you know, that the less you know going in the better, it's probably true for most films, and I think if you're listening to this, you're a fan of the genre, you know, I'd be hesitant to recommend this to people who are not fans of the genre. It's certainly worth watching because you just might love it. I seriously doubt you would hate it.
You know what? I would recommend it for people who like psychological thrillers too, or thrillers that you know.
To me, that goes within the genre.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a fair point. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because as we've always discussed in prior episodes, how thrillers and horror and various other things overlap a lot of the time. So that's a fair point.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you're a horror fan, there's a good chance you'll like dig a lot of Hitchcock films, right?
Yeah.
And besides just the obvious Psycho and Birds.
Right. Yep, that's true. All right, so yeah, we'll talk about everything and anything. So I'm texting Eric last night. I'm saying, hey, Eric, have you seen this film yet? And he goes, no. And I'm typing, all right, well, I won't say any more. And as I'm typing, I hear this pop, and I turn, and I just suddenly see all this blood on the wall. I go, what the hell just happened? And so I had to literally rewind the film at that point. So
you're right at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
because
I was thinking, this is kind of – yeah, I was thinking, this is kind of a weird film. You could tell it's made by art house directors. And so I was just curious to see what you thought of the film, Eric. And that's why I was texting you. And so, yeah, and then suddenly I had one of the big moments happen as I'm talking to you. But either way, we'll get into that moment, too.
Yeah, that happened to me, too, actually. I was writing down something or looking at my phone real quickly. And suddenly, and I was wearing headphones, so it like jumped. And looked at it, I feel like I missed that moment, so I had to go back just to see what the fuck just happened.
Yeah. Well, it happened quickly, and it happened kind of out of nowhere, because you're really not given a whole lot of background on that character, who's the mom of the children in this movie. She goes and talks to her still husband, I guess, who tells her that he wants a divorce because he's going to marry another woman. And so she goes home and starts drinking wine, which is understandable. And then just like grabs a gun out of her purse and blows her head off in one smooth motion. It was really pretty shocking.
Yeah, can I say there's some shockingly irresponsible gun ownership in this film?
True.
Yeah.
True.
I wondered, and to be fair, they don't focus on the mom much at all. They don't focus on what has transpired up to this point, and it really doesn't matter a lot. What matters is the mother's suicide.
Right.
You know, we don't need to. It doesn't matter what her mental health was. It doesn't matter, you know, who was at fault for the relationship breaking down. It doesn't really even matter. Like, you know, it wasn't her fault or the father's fault. You know, what role did Grace play? None of that really matters fundamentally, although it may have helped a little bit in some places. But, you know, so we are just meeting this woman, and she just seems like a fairly normal mom. And then she pulls a gun out of her handbag and commits suicide. And it's just sort of like a, huh? But like my second or third thought might have been like, so why was she planning on coming there and committing suicide? Why did she have the gun? Does she normally, is this Texas? Does she normally walk around with a gun in her handbag?
Well, there
might be more guns in handbags than you suspect, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it might be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know people that walk down the street with their kids just in my neighborhood, and our neighborhood is fairly peaceful, and they say, oh, we always carry a gun. You never know. A bear could jump out of the woods. It's like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that. So I say, all right,
What struck me about the suicide is that it wasn't sensationalized like it is in a lot of movies that we watch. Normally there's no big ghastly splatter, but it was just, you know, pop, splat, dead.
Right.
I have a feeling, I've never had the opportunity to watch somebody blow their brains out, but I have a feeling that it's probably a little more true to life than the exaggerated version.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Also, the whole setup was just basically the wife is bringing the kids to the husband's house because they're separated, as Eric mentioned, and she's dropping them off for, you know, the weekend or the week or whatever. It's sometime during the summer. We don't know the location of the residences, except for the lodge. The lodge is supposed to be in
someplace cold.
Massachusetts is what the blurbs all said. But yeah, we're assuming this is Pennsylvania or New Jersey or New York.
It doesn't matter.
I think it's good. Given that winter, it looks worse than that.
Well, it is. It actually it actually took place in it actually was filmed in Quebec, as I said. But either way, the thing is that I guess she was going over there dropping the kids off, and she was hoping
that things would patch up.
Yeah, that would patch up is my guess. And obviously,
she's nice in the mirror and stuff like that, but she's absolutely stressed out. And I think there was actually something like where the husband said that the woman Grace was not going to be there, so you know they could talk. But I guess she knows the extra the wine glasses there, so he was lying.
I don't think she was there.
Yeah, she was, because when she gets to the house, she sees a woman shadow walking through the down the stairs.
Oh, I don't remember that. Okay, fair enough. Either way, she obviously has a depression, I guess, right? I mean, her marriage is unfortunately over, and she obviously isn't handling it that well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you could say that, Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah, based off of what happens. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But she is definitely a behavioral health individual.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, and for me, probably the most horrifying part of this movie, for me personally, was the daughter after the funeral.
Yes.
Because I had religion in my life, so I can't really relate, but I can imagine, because... They're clearly a semi-religious family, and after the funeral, this daughter is just beside herself, of course, because her mother is dead, but she keeps on saying over and over again to her father, she can't go to heaven. She can't go to heaven. And I was just like, oh, Jesus Christ, because she's clearly been taught in church. That if somebody commits suicide, that you can't go to heaven, and that's what her mom did, and so her mom can't go to heaven. And so not only is her mom dead, but also burning in hell, and just watching the young actress who did that really nailed it. It was really quite effective.
Oh, yeah.
Not hell, at least purgatory or limbo, anyway.
Well, but it really was nice. I think it was what really helped that scene, too, was at the funeral, they're all released in the black balloon. She ties the doll that represents her mother to her, and it won't fly, which kind of
seems it just drops to the ground, yep.
Ground, so it's just, and that's what completely just falls apart.
It's also, this is part of what you were talking about, Eric, the beauty of the shots here, because not only are the shots beautiful, but the interesting locations they use, from the husband's postmodern home to the church's postmodern look, mm-hmm. it makes it even more like I don't know, different, if not odd or not necessarily uncomfortable, but just different, because it's just and it was interesting too that they were using black balloons too. I felt that was interesting as well. I don't know what they would use at a funeral, but
it
I guess
is a funeral. You know, you wear black at a funeral. That makes sense.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. I don't know if this is a thing. I don't know if it's a European thing. I thought everyone's so environmentally conscious.
I was thinking that too,
about letting balloons out at a funeral, and we're sorry your mom's dead, but the birds don't have to choke to death. You know, I thought, you know, it's, you know, somebody would have been raising a stink over that. I don't know. Maybe it's just a symbolism thing that is I've never been made aware of.
Well, I doubt anybody at the funeral would be a environmentalist crazy.
You don't know some of those people then.
Mike no, is
at least the people that
on the world.
At least the people that went to the funeral, maybe there'd be people that are walking by that would say, but I can't believe anybody that actually went to the funeral that would publicly say that out loud, Mike.
I don't know. Mike fanatics don't tend to have
worse than people.
Well, you're right, Mike. There is a lot of
fanatics. It doesn't matter.
Right. Mike had to bring up the environmental thing.
So let's move on.
Okay. Jesus.
Just saying, that's where my brain went.
Yes, your brain goes to strange places. That's what sociopaths do. They think weird things.
Oh, my God.
Okay, actually, it wasn't weird, but it was definitely... I actually felt the same. Like, I was thinking the same thing. I'm saying,
well, this is also very early in the movie, so I don't know what the hell this movie is going to be, right? I don't know what the tone of it's going to be. I haven't, you know, I've already been sort of jarred out of the film with the suicide in the first place.
Right. So I'm believing it's a Roman Catholic, and if it's not Roman Catholic, it's at least Episcopal or Eastern Orthodox, because it had that imagery in the church, inside the church. Then we head over to 6 months later, and the kids now live with the father, obviously.
Hey, Phil?
Yes.
Can you tell me where you got that time reference? Because
there was a placard.
Really? Yeah, 6 months later. Yeah.
Wait for a second. All right.
It was big, bold letters. 6 months later.
It was like a black screen. Hey, and said 6 months later.
Phil missed somebody blowing their head off. So leave me alone.
That happened much faster.
Yeah, yeah. At least the placard was 3 seconds. And this is where we're finding out about a little backstory about the father and the kids and if they're healing and stuff. And then we learn about Grace. Basically, Grace is the new girlfriend who the father met during his research on true crime books, I guess, or basically nonfiction books. It appears that he's some sort of author/researcher. And he was doing books on cults, and the woman Grace, we discover, is the only survivor of a suicide cult, and also the daughter of the leader of the suicide cult. I missed all that too,
by the way.
Oh, geez, this error.
Oh, you saw that too? Oh, whoops.
Well, I went back and looked for that though, because like later in the movie, when stuff happens, I was like, wait, what? So I went back, and there's like 3 seconds of dialogue between the siblings that delivers that information.
Gotcha. Just some trivia that I read was the man that plays the cult leader is Danny Keough, who is actually the father of Riley Keough. So it was kind of.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I see that right now. Oh, that's cool. Interesting.
Yeah. So he's he married. The one that married Michael Jackson or whatever her name is. Remember Lisa Marie Presley, was it?
Yes.
That's the mother. So that's just some trivia. That was pretty effed up. And I think the film is actually pointing us towards us to think that, we're going to be going into some sort of like really crazy supernatural thing at this point, because the kids do sneak on the father's computer to look at his research and the video of all the corpses in the basement. And you find out that it was a 12-year-old girl that was recording the video, and it was the daughter. And yeah, so it's kind of freaky, I felt. It was
See, wonderful. and I got all that, but I missed just like that whole section starts with the brother saying, "I knew it. He met her while he was doing his book," and I missed that line. So like I got the whole part about the cult and the daughter and anything. I did not realize that Grace was the daughter until much later.
Well, our first introduction to her really is that the son calls her the retard.
That's true. He does say,
and
that,
in fact, sorry. that's what I wrote down in my notes, because because usually I write down things like father, son, whatever, until I get a name to go with it. And all I had to go with was retard, so I wrote it down. I know some people are not. I know some the name is not good to use. The words, it was used in the film, and given that he's, I'm guessing, playing about a 15-year-old boy, I know I've dealt with enough 15-year-old boys. They use that word a lot, appropriate or not.
That's right. True.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Yeah, so basically the son especially and the daughter a little bit don't like this new woman in the father's life because they blame her for the breakup of their mother and father.
Oh, yeah. And things only get exasperated even further when they have a little, they're getting, having a little dinner outside, and he tells them he's going to marry her.
Right. Now, Chrissy has just joined us. Chrissy.
Hello.
Hey, Chrissy.
Yes.
Hey,
Chrissy. Hi.
All right, so Chrissy, since I totally
apologize. I got stuck at work. We had an air conditioning crisis. The building was so hot. I'm the only person who was willing to stay there with all of the droves of construction workers coming in was me. So I sincerely apologize. Somebody had to stay.
Were they hot construction workers?
No.
Some of them were, actually, yeah. I was kind of drooling.
Then make good decision, then.
Anyway.
Now, Chrissy, so how did you hear about this film, and what's your thoughts?
Well, I heard about it earlier this year. I think when we were doing the What's Coming Up episode, and I heard about it, and the premise sounded really interesting. I honestly went in with low expectations, so I enjoyed this very much. It was not what I was expecting, though. I was expecting something, I don't know, I guess a little more home invasion. I liked where this went. I enjoyed the acting. I particularly loved the atmosphere. I did enjoy all the symbolism. However, I would not consider this, you know, again, they had the superlatives on the ads, the posters and things saying, scary movie you've ever seen, you know, all that. I did not think this was scary. I thought it was an incredibly interesting portrait of grief, particularly for these children who lost a parent, and how that anger and frustration manifested itself. I thought it was very heavy in symbolism, which I still have not actually right now. I've been thinking about it all day because I watched it this morning. I don't know if it was maybe a little too heavy-handed for me. And I'm still trying to translate. I think I know what all that symbolism was trying to say, but I'm not entirely sure. But I did enjoy this film, and I would recommend it, but I would call it I'm going to do the – Chrissy's going to call this a dark drama thing and not really a horror film.
Bing! We have
Thank
a match.
You.
Yeah.
Eric, there you go.
Yeah, it's a dark drama, and it's definitely – I found it more sad but incredibly interesting. I really thought it was interesting. If I had one word to describe this film, it would be that. It would be just interesting. This went places I was not expecting it to go. And that's what made it really great for me. I really had fun trying to figure out what was going on. I appreciated the twists and turns. And when I finally did figure out what was going on, I was like, oh, wow. This is like grief to the nth degree, expressing itself. But perhaps because of my experience growing up, I might have connected to it in a different way than maybe your average viewer would have. Clearly, these children were filled with rage and at the loss of their mother, and they needed to express it. And because they are emotionally immature, they chose a target for that. And so that's how they sort of took out their rage. And I could absolutely identify with that. I can't say that viewers who were not in that same situation would maybe understand why they did what they did. I think it's still an interesting twist and it's still interesting, but I think this movie is, I would guess the people who wrote this have probably been through that type of specific grief experience. But I enjoyed it because of that. There were some holes in the story. I have some questions. I don't know what you guys discussed so far, but I definitely have questions for you because there were a few things I was kind of confused about. So hopefully you'll be able to answer those.
No, that's cool, Chrissy. We were just diving into, how the children were
dealing with the suicide,
like, mad at the stepmother after grieving for their mother. So that kind of ties right in with what you were saying.
I was just gonna
chime in and say that I could totally relate to what was going on here, because my parents got divorced when I was 5. I was quite young when it happened. And my father had started seeing my future stepmother before that process was complete. It was a number of years before they actually got married. But I was a total dick to my stepmother for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I told my dad, look, if you're going to marry her, you're going to marry her, but she is not my mom. And as far as I'm concerned, she will never be a part of my family.
Yep.
And I actually said that out loud to my father. So I get it.
Do you still feel that way, Ark?
No, I don't. Okay. Yep. My stepmother and I actually have a wonderful relationship at this point.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of it, too, in that time, Eric, just like you said, you know, these things take time. And a lot of times the adults are not necessarily better adjusted to moving on to a new partner, whether it's divorce or death or whatever. In this case, you had a double whammy. They were already divorced and then she commits suicide. But I think in some ways the adults,
well, they were separated and the thing that makes her
right. That's right. And that's what pushed her over the edge. We said, I think we should make it final.
Yeah.
But I think in many ways adults can deal with it a little differently. Whereas children, I think what adults forget is that children, no matter what age, and whether the parent died or whether they're getting a divorce, I think what the adults forget to consider, maybe because I'm going to say there, because I'm just going to put myself back in that place as a child who dealt with that situation, not the same as you, but similar. They don't realize that we become destabilized. And so it's not just, okay, wait a minute, mommy's gone or daddy's gone, whether it's through divorce or death, and now you're just jumping into bed with somebody else. It even goes deeper than that. It's more about, you changed my whole life. You changed my structure. You changed my way of living. You just discarded her, like she's not part of us anymore. And I think that's where that real rage comes from with the kids. It's not so much daddy needs to move on. I think it's that children or teens, or even up into teenage and early adult years, into their early 20s, they're destabilized. And so that creates a triple threat. And I thought it was very interesting with the dollhouse that it was pretty clear that either the older boy or the daughter, I still can't figure out which one, was already planning what was going to happen. That's what that dollhouse imagery was about.
Right. And they had to, explain some of the things that happened later on in the film. Right. Some of the things that they find could only have been pre-planned.
And here's my big issue with this movie, and I'm not saying that it ruins the movie for me, but it didn't even occur to me while I was watching the movie, but after I was done watching the movie, it occurred to me, hey, you know what? Isn't that plan a little complex for a couple of kids?
Well, they had seen A Sixth Sense and the others and Goodnight Mommy.
No, but seriously, what they go about doing and how they're able to pull it off, I'm like, I don't know if I buy that.
There's a few moments myself, like the snow angels that somehow are all made without footprints around those snow angels.
There's that. I had forgotten about that. It's the fact that the whole thing really hinges on the father being called away. Because otherwise, now maybe the kid just came up with a plan and they just got lucky, or maybe this is just the thing that happens every Christmas. Daddy gets called away, right? Because they go to the lodge.
I thought it was pre-planned.
What?
Yeah, because there were
At Thanksgiving, the father says, let's go to the lodge for Christmas, and for about a week I have to leave.
Oh, okay.
So he says it to them at Thanksgiving. So they knew it was all about the 1 week different, you know, time frame the father would be.
And there's even a little scene where the two siblings are hunched over the house using the dolls to plan with where they're going to do things.
Here's my question about that, though. He said he was going to be back on the 25th, right, before he gets in the truck and he leaves. But then there's a moment later. This is one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about, where the calendar shows January 9th.
Yeah, the kids keep on pushing forward.
Oh, they do. Okay, I was going to ask you about that because it didn't make sense to me. The other story issue I had with this, I agree with you guys that although I thought this was a really good movie, with the kids planning something that complex, they didn't justify it. Like, if they had given us a scene where, for example, the older son, who is obviously the mastermind of the whole thing, if he had been a super genius or something, and he was getting rewarded at school for, like, I don't know, doing some kind of project that, you know, was related to these kinds of complex plans or something. Yeah. I just needed some justification for that. I didn't really see the brains for that. Yeah.
Today's assignment is, how would you get revenge on an adult that you think murdered your mother?
maybe the kid was passionate about, like, murder mysteries or something. Or the little girl. Something, some kind of tidbit to give us a reason.
Yeah, well, definitely horror films.
Well, but you know, it kind of felt like the Home Alone version of a horror movie. You know, a horror movie of Home Alone, shit like that. He's able to plan out how to hang himself in one scene without actually putting himself at risk. Somehow, disputes sound perfectly throughout an entire building. It doesn't sound like it's just coming from a single room.
Right.
He saw Heathers. He saw The Others. He saw Sixth Sense. All the films that Mike mentioned.
Right. So one of the things I was going to say, Chrissy, right before you came on, because we were talking about the family relationship and the suicide and whatnot, is the fact that I give the directors credit because they don't overwrite the backstory, right? They don't do the... Oh God, sis! I don't want to have to go spend a weekend with my father, separated father, and his mistress. You know, they don't do that kind of overwriting. It's a common enough thing, and they trust the audience to be smart enough to pick up on it. You know, that said, I grant, and it's, I don't know how you do it in a way that doesn't over foreshadow something, right? That will tip your hand to what's going to come.
Well, you could have even
done about what you do with the kid, right? I mean, we got the background on nobody in this film. Everything is what transpired. Well, I scratch that. We got background on nobody except for Grace, right? Everything is clues about the present going forward, right? And we pick up clues that the father is a writer who's researched books. Based on the actions of the kids and what we find in his office, we can pick up through the dialogue what's going on with the father and Grace. You know, they don't give us those as you call them, the, you know, as you know, Bobs.
Yeah,
right? and other things.
Yeah, well, and another thing too, I think with this is that there was a lot of interesting stuff. Well, in that vein, like when I talk about justifying it, and really this is almost like nitpicking for me because I could have overlooked it. Really all they needed was a couple of even visual references. So like the kid reading murder mysteries or reading revenge books, just something to give us the idea.
Right.
Well, you know what? That was really all we needed. And then it would have been enough.
What the hell kind of teenager comes up with a high-minded plan like, I know, we'll convince her that we're all dead
in purgatory. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you why. First of all, the film is Riley Keough's film, right? So only the first 20 minutes is otherwise, but the rest of the film is all through her perspective mostly. So they obviously wanted the film based around her character. So the first 20 minutes was just a general setup, and I don't really know if or needed to fill it up because it was really Riley Keough's story. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is the kid is 16 anyway, so it's not like he's stupid, right? I mean, it's not like he's...
But it doesn't make him a genius either.
I understand that, Abe, but...
No, but Phil, you got to admit, that is a bizarre plan. I don't care how old the characters are. That is a weird plan.
Well, I'll tell you why they thought of doing it with her, because they knew she was a religious fundamentalist from a cult who would fall for the limbo and purgatory and all this other crap that they present. I think that's why. And then, I mean, there's some things that don't work, right? Because she says, yeah, that I don't believe it because I can feel pain and whatever. I'm cold. You know, if we were dead, we wouldn't feel these things. But again, when she finally goes over the edge, it's the dog. They murdered the dog. So...
Which would have driven you over the edge, too.
Oh, you're damn right. Those kids are dead.
Hang on.
We're getting a game ahead here.
The kids did not murder the dog. The dog got out and died. There's a difference.
Mike, on this one. They are responsible for the death of the dog.
Yes.
I can accept that. That's different. That's different than murder. They didn't stab the fucking dog.
Well, you don't go to prison for murder for a dog.
It's manslaughter.
But it's still going to be, you know, a really hard thing to forget.
There was no malicious intent towards the dog. That's all.
Right.
No, but it was reckless endangerment.
That's third degree murder.
Well, see, this is where I think the kid part of it comes in, right? Is that I can see, and, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Klebold and Harris, when, you know, they did the Columbine thing, you know, like I said, I deal with young, you know, teenage boys frequently. I always found their plan remarkably well thought out because teenagers are not well grounded in reality. And then later on, you find out that they had like planned to then like, you know, go to the airport and hijack a plane. They just never got to the completely ludicrous part of their plan. And it suddenly made a lot more sense when I heard their full plan. I said, okay, that sounds like something a stupid teenager would come up with. Not to make light of the whole Columbine thing.
No, but I see your point, though.
In this case, it's the failure to think through what they're doing. To think through the danger of fucking around with a person's medication. And that also, I think, gives them...
Yeah. They also drugged her, too, which is illegal.
Oh, yeah, they knocked her out. Yeah.
And, right. You know, and they were they are stupid kids, because even if everything turned out okay when the father showed up, they're fucking screwed, because it's not like the father's not going to find out, what did you just do? Right?
Well, and
yeah.
Yes, yeah, good point.
Well, and here's another thing in this. Yeah, well, this may be going off onto a little bit of a different track with what we're talking about, but I did want to make sure that I brought it up. There is a very strong theme in here. I don't know if you guys mentioned it already, about invisibility. There is Grace in the beginning of the film is like, and for the first 20 minutes at least, is like this ghost figure. You know, she in the opening, she's only mentioned.
Yeah.
I noticed that they purposely hid her from view for a significant portion of the beginning of the movie.
I wrote it down. It was like 21 minutes.
Right. Yeah. The first time we see her as a child in the reflection of the mirror during the recording of all the dead people in the basement of the cult. And she has that psycho look on her face.
Right, but before
and so
that,
right there, we're thinking this is going to be a demon possession or some sort of weird film like that is where I was thinking it was going. Continue, Christy.
Right, but we only see her through the frosted glass in the windows, you know, where he hugs her, where they're having that discussion, the father hugs her. And then the second time we see her is through the frosty windows as she approaches the car. And then even when she gets in the car, her back is turned to the children for several minutes. There's this snowy, barren landscape that is just so barren that people get lost in it. And in fact, there is a pullback shot where we see her walking through the snow and then it's pulled back and pulled back and pulled back. So she's like a speck. You know, she looks tiny, like she's insignificant. Then there are other instances of fuzzy imagery or foggy or lack of clarity in this film. Like when she's looking through the frosted windows out at the kids. And also when she's sort of walking on the ice that she doesn't realize is kind of thin and she falls in going after the girl's doll. What this all suggests thematically is that this is about invisibility. Think about the father ignoring the children's grief, right? He does not listen to them. He does not regard what they say with their feelings toward Grace. In addition, Grace herself grew up invisible because she was part of a cult, right? She was nothing more than her father's little emotional toy to play with. And then there is, in a larger context, I think there's also a message in here because of all of the religious symbolism. And even if you look at the score, if you look at the tracks on the score, they are all labeled in regard to like religious themes. Like there's the score. One of the tracks is called The Last Supper. One of them is called Repent. One of them is called like they just all go through this very heavy religious symbolism. So I think that also suggests that this film is also about how, with the lack of clarity, is religion a real thing? Or is it something that clouds our perception of life? So I think this film has a lot to say on a really deep level, which is also, like, if you're into that kind of thing, I think you could find it in this. You know, when the mother shoots herself, she sits in front of a cross and the blood goes right on the cross. I mean, that's, like I said, some of the symbolism in this was so heavy-handed that I was like, whatever, dude, I get it. But it was still kind of interesting because it sort of helped me see the themes a little bit more clearly. But anyway, I'm sorry.
So keep in mind, Chrissy, that you're hyper aware of symbolism and a lot of people are not.
Okay. So maybe.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't know. I am actually being helpful. I have no idea, but whatever.
I mean, I don't know that I'm hyper aware of symbolism. I'm aware it exists, but you know, yeah, I was one of the things I forgot to bring up before was right. So the cloud of blood over the white cross on the wall at the beginning of the film. The giant cross shaped house.
You gotta remember the whole family.
So that symbolism is there, right? There's lots of images of Mother Mary on the wall, which is both a reminder of the religious symbolism for that, but I think it also is a reminder of, you know, of their actual mother, right? Sort of like, and that's another thing I wasn't sure of, like, is this going to end up being a ghost story? You know, is the mom's ghost out there somewhere? Is she caught doing these things?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But the thing is, I think the religious symbolism was, I think, fairly obvious. But Chrissy, you said you get it. I get that they were saying religion, God, cross, Jesus, Mary. I got that. I still don't know what they were saying with it. And I think that's one of the other reasons I could say, well, I think maybe that's what they were trying to say. But
no, go ahead, Phil. You go first and then I'll go. Phil, you go first
and
I'll go.
I don't think the symbolism was all that important to the main story. I think the point of the religion was the starting point for the kids to basically trick this woman Grace, because first of all, it's got to be all Catholics because the directors are Catholics, they're Austrians, and all the imagery in this is Catholic. So I'm assuming it's a Catholic family. So what happens is the mother was supposed to be very religious too, because they talk about it a number of times, the woman that killed herself. Never mind the kids thinking that, as you said earlier, Eric, that the girl's screaming that she suicided, so she's not going to go to heaven and all this other stuff. So what happens is they know this girl came from a religious cult that was Christianity crazy type cult. And so they want to use that against her. because they know that's how they could trick her. In other words, if they tried aliens or something like that, she'd just poo-poo it. But if it's related to her childhood, yeah, her trauma, thank you, then that is why they went that way. And that's what I think. What? I mean, obviously, you're going.
Yeah, one thing I really like is how they portray Grace as a very normal individual. You know, a nice, sweet person who just honestly, genuinely wants to fit in. And, you know, instead of being, you know, what they initially feel they build off as a sinister figure. Since kids, she is a sinister figure, but what we're seeing from the outsider perspective is just a person who's struggling to live a normal life. You know, her dog, for example, is what one of her own gift to herself, because it is also symbolizes her own life separated from her past.
It's a symbol of her liberation.
Exactly.
Well, but that's what I was saying, Phil, about invisibility. I'm not necessarily sure, and we won't know unless we actually see an interview with the filmmakers who talk about it, right? But if I were to be asked in a film class to write a thesis about this, I know I would have enough stuff to support the idea that the real comment they're trying to make is, like I said just earlier, about invisibility. In other words, this girl who was it's not really about religion. Like, even when the mother shoots herself, right, and there's the cross on the wall, she has her back turned to that cross. It's like God has forsaken her, right? The blessing she wanted was to get back with her husband, and God basically said no. Instead, he delivers, hey, I'm going to go marry this other chick. Meanwhile,
well, but she's the one that turned her back to the cross. The cross didn't turn its back on her.
Right, but my point is that she felt like God had forsaken her. There is a message in that there is some forsaking. Whether or not God actually forsook her, or whether or not she feels like God had forsaken her, which we know when most people commit suicide, that's probably, if they are religious, one of the thoughts they have. God has forsaken me. I cannot get through this. The other thing, or my system of religion, whatever it is you choose to believe in. The other thing is that Grace was basically ignored in the cult, right? And we know about cults now. We have studied them sociologically. There are tons of scientific papers about this. In this blind mentality, this sort of, we surrender to the cult, but you're not an individual. You are part of a group. You are no longer an individual. And then the kids struggling to make their frustration and their anger and their upset heard to their dad. Even when the girl is screaming, crying in her bed, which, by the way, I thought that girl did a fantastic job during that scene, because she could have been sappy and made us not care about her. Like, there's crying that's bullshit crying in a movie, and you know it's bullshit crying, and you don't feel bad.
Oh, she's this a good crier, girl, because when the father
dude,
dies,
I don't
too.
Know what they fucking did to her, like, or whether she's just such a good actress that she was dreaming about her own mother being dead or something, but my God, that was phenomenal. That scene where she was just bawling.
Yeah, and she
that was amazing.
Again. She does it again at the end with the father, too.
She really does, and you really believe it, and she really sells it, as my mom used to say.
And she even shows really genuine remorse when when Grace finds the dog. She's apologizing, like she actually was apologizing.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But even the father, when she's crying, going, Daddy, she won't go to heaven, don't you understand? And the father's just kind of sitting there like, yeah, okay. Like, so I think about less. I don't necessarily think this film is a comment on religion. I really do think it's more of a comment on invisibility. And does God see us? Do we actually, or God, you know, whatever your religious system is, whether it's God or Buddha or, you know, pagan or whatever it is, do the upper forces actually see us? Are they really protecting us? Are they out there? Is anyone actually listening? Like, that was kind of more what I took. I also, by the way, and this is going a little bit in a different direction, I don't know if you guys talked about this already, but my God, that father was creepy. I did not like him at all. And Grace felt to me like she was way too young to be with a guy that old, and that was even freakier. But that's just
Grace is 30 years old based off of the obituary, and you figure the father's at least 10.
Did you pause it too?
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. at least 10 years older. The father, in real life, the actor is 10 years older anyway. So it makes sense that...
I'm sorry, that's gross. And
I married my wife when she was 29 and I was 39. So.
Okay, but you got...
No, that's gross for her.
Okay. Well, let's separate from the symbolism for a moment.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a couple questions about Grace, if anybody can answer them.
Sure.
One, how did she get out of the cult suicide?
Oh, the father set it up. He said that he wants her to send the message, so that's why he didn't kill her.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he wanted her to record it all and pass on the message to the next group of people. And of course,
the question is,
yeah.
Does anybody know what the nosebleeds were about?
No. I think that was a red herring to make us think it was supernatural film.
Yeah, you know, and also I think just to kind of be a visual a sign of when the stress is starting to erode on her.
Okay.
Right. You know, right. Yeah, well, like Japanese anime, right?
Yeah. Anytime she sees like some of the triggers of a memory very strongly, or she's feeling nervous, that's when she gets nosebleeds.
Well, and the thing is, too, you're also talking about that classic image of blood on the snow, you know, which is always a symbol of a symbol, or, you know, blood on white sheets. When a virgin has, you know, finally lost her virginity, it's the whole idea of the loss of innocence. And so just like Abe just said, you know, or Phil, whichever one of you it was that just said, whenever she had a trigger memory, that blood would spill out her nose. That was like when her innocence was shattered. So it's almost like a spiritual innocence. So symbolically, that's what it means. I think Phil and Abe are both correct in that it didn't really necessarily mean anything, but I think it was more of a symbolic thing rather than a plot.
Okay,
thing.
Well, it happened more than once, so I just figured I'd talk about it.
Yeah, I think it was about the whole idea of tainted innocence. That would be my theory. I mean, again, that's a guess, but that's kind of an obvious one, like blood on the snow and the blood on the shroud and the blood on the bed and the, you know, when you lose your virginity, that's kind of a common thing.
Right.
So when it didn't go anywhere, I was like, okay, maybe they just stuck this in there for symbols reasons, but I did not pick up on what Abe just said, which is whenever she had a trigger memory, which would make sense.
I was going to say it also emphasizes her humanity, her vulnerability, because really up to that point in the film, she's been the other, right? She's been the kid's boogeyman. You know, right. You mentioned the invisibility. She's at the beginning of the film. Right. She's really invisible to the kids, right? The kids. This is the first time the kids are really going to spend any time with her, and they make that clear. You know, right. And so the first time we see her, which is really the adult her, is when she gets in the car, which is really when this exposure to the kids is going to begin.
Continue.
Pretty much it.
Right. I was going to say, to add on to you, Mike, is so she's the boogeyman up until basically she goes to save the doll in the lake. And then at that point, you find out that, you know what, she ain't the boogeyman at all. So the question is she going to go nuts? Is the ex-wife's ghost going to torture them? Or is, as Chrissy said, maybe it could be a do ex machina and it was going to be a home invasion or some other thing at that point? Because at that point, I was thinking, okay, she's not the boogeyman after all. And she wasn't.
No.
At least not until she was off her meds for a while.
Yeah.
Well, and then of course when the dog is dead, I mean that's it. I mean, first of all, when you have two people, it's just amazing what these kids did to this woman, because by taking the house, everything out of the house, jumping the clock ahead 9 days, having the obituary and all this other crap, and then saying I think we're dead, and then pulling the Heathers moment where he hangs himself to show, look, I'm not, I can hang myself and we're not going to get killed. See, because we're already dead. And she's fighting it continuously. And the moment she finally determines that they're dead, or at least she thinks they're dead, is when she finds her dog dead and she snaps. And that's the moment that she becomes the antagonist, and yet only an antagonist because of what the children did to her, because they were pure evil. Now, again, they're just stupid kids, so you can say they're just stupid kids. But it was pretty evil what they did, because like taking people's medication, drugging people, you know, taking all the food out of the house, the, you know, on and on and on, and then the dog dies. It's just and then the photo, the best part of all, this is the part I was wondering the whole time, was why isn't the father sending the police there for courtesy?
Yeah, good point.
But we know why. We find out why, though.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Why? Because the daughter has been charging her phone and talking to the father daily.
Right.
And it's like, right, fuckers. That's pure evil.
Yeah.
Well,
I kind of said I just wanted a clue as to how these kids were so smart. Just a tiny clue.
This was Home Alone level genius in terms of planning and executing.
Well, we saw this in Nightmare on Elm Street too, Eric, right?
Yeah. Well, she is in Nightmare on Elm Street she had a book. That explained it to her.
That's right.
You know, it's the kids are traumatized too. Right. The kids are going through shit and they're dumb kids. I mean, for me, the boy is probably 15 or 16. He seemed a little bit more on the young side to me, so I was thinking more 15. But, you know, which we think of as an older kid. But, man, you have to realize how fucking stupid teenagers can be. Their whole judgment center is gone.
I got to interject here for a second. Yeah. You got to remember that usually horror movies are about teenage kids, like Scream and Nightmare on Elm Street and on and on and on, you know, coincidence that they're Wes Craven films. But the actors that play them are always in their 20s. Here, these are the same type of characters as we would see in Scream or Nightmare on Elm Street. The difference is the actors that are actually playing them are the correct age.
Or roughly. Usually they still, when you cast a child actor, they're usually still like a year or two older than what they're actually playing as. That's typical. But they're at least in the ballpark. But this is also not what their end game is. It's their failure to think through and understand the potential consequences. Because
they're going to get punished big time by their father.
Oh,
if
absolutely.
Something bad happened, they were fucked no matter what. Because Grace is going to say, that was a funny joke. No, she's going to say, Dad, guess what the kids did?
A couple
or
of things.
Or should we sit on the floor sobbing?
A couple of things to mention here. One is that the more I think about this, the more I find it highly unlikely that anybody would be able to pull this off, let alone a couple of teenagers. The second thing is that teenagers, and Mike, I think this is what you were trying to just say, is that teenagers really just have no comprehension of how mean they're being to other people when they're being mean to other people. I mean, even their peers in school, they do some really nasty shit to other kids and don't even like see it that way. They just see it as a goof. So that might be, I mean, you keep on using the word evil here, Phil, but evil to me is, I mean.
Well, the reason I say it's evil is because they're taking out the drugs, using the drugs to knock her out.
No,
but I don't know that they understand the consequences. I don't think they understand.
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing. Whether it's they think it's a joke or they're just stupid, it doesn't make the point that it's still not evil. It's still evil, whether or not they intended it in their hearts or not.
That's fair enough. I just don't think, like Mike was saying, I don't think they just thought through the whole thing. Like, I don't think they realized that there was a possibility that, hey, we might actually send this woman into Cuckoo Town. Doing this to her.
They just imagine in an almost in completely unrealistic you know, sense of how she might just walk out the door, screaming in frustration, and then how she's gone from their lives, that's all taken care of. But as Mike says, a lot of teenagers, you know, they just kind of think that you know, of the almost like the outline, and don't really.
We understand that the kids are just stupid. I mean, that's right. Really what it is. I mean, Eric saw Ozark season 3. Everybody drink. There's a scene where there's a guy in the show can't get it up because he's on an antidepressant. So he stops taking the antidepressant so he can get it up. But when he stops taking the antidepressant, he starts going nuts. And children don't know that's what will happen if certain medicine that will help people who have behavioral health issues, if you take away their medicine, they may start acting wrong. Now, even after they took away her medicine and she started acting wrong, she was still functional. But the problem is that they also drugged her, which obviously is a very bad thing. And they fucked up because they let the dog out. Mm-hmm. And the moment the dog died, it was all over.
There was also the moment where she goes out to go find help right in the middle of a fucking storm, and they barely even try to stop her. You know, at that point they probably should say something because she could honestly freeze to death out there.
Right.
I think it's fair to think
kids are angry too. Right. They are angry with her. They blame her for the death of her mother. They may not realize how much damage they're going to do. They certainly don't expect their father to die. They don't expect themselves to end up where they end up in the bottom at the end of the film. They don't expect it to backfire as badly as it is. But they want to hurt her and they want to drive her away. So they're not completely innocent here. It's just because of what they've been through that you could kind of sort of understand it. Now, when this shows up on the morning newspaper, right, you turn on the news in the morning and it's two children drive their mother, their father's mistress insane by, you know, hiding her medication and convincing her that they're dead and in purgatory. Pretty much everybody in the country, I don't care which side of the political aisle you're on, is going to say that's fucked up.
Oh, absolutely.
These kids are going. If they ever get rescued, these kids are going into therapy. They're going into serious therapy. They have done bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Bad children.
Yes. There's no doubt about it. And that's
I personally think that they're not walking away from there. I think they're done. And the situation is just like everybody in the those kids are acting on emotion rather than any logic. You know, that is what their fuel right there.
There's no logic because it's just an evil thing to do.
They've
been to church and they know you don't do something like that. So they know it's bad.
But that also comes down to how they try to justify such a wicked thing because they see her as evil.
Right. But it's just pure stupid. Well, that's the thing. They think she's evil, and it's like, obviously, she isn't. But the other thing that's stupid, even if you want to take away all the evilness of what they did, just the stupidity of letting the pipes freeze, so the father's going to have to pay thousands of dollars to fix it.
And that's the part where they're going to get
in trouble by the father. Right, right, exactly, Eric. Yeah, so I think we can all agree it was not justified what they did.
No.
That's for sure.
Right.
I can understand them wanting revenge on her. Remember, not only do they think that she's the reason the mother committed suicide, they think she's not only did her mother commit suicide, but she's going to go to hell.
Well, they also think she's the reason the parents broke up as well, which is probably true.
We don't know, and I think that's a fair thing.
We don't know.
Kid is going to blame even if like dad met her 6 months after they broke up, then he's not to blame for them breaking up, but he's to blame for them not getting back together again.
Well, he does. I mean, the kids do say when they're doing that like research or whatever in that room, it's like she's the chick from Dad's book.
Right.
So clearly the father had some contact with this woman probably well before the current time that we're at, you know,
right.
And I do maintain the father was not really with it either.
No,
I mean, he just was not. I mean, like I was talking about age difference. Yeah. Okay. You know, listen, we all know that as you get older, age does not make a difference, but I will maintain that if you are with somebody who is extraordinarily immature, right? Like you look at the way that the father talks to Grace, he's almost treating her like she's a young child, not a lover that he's passionate about, but somebody that he can take care of.
And
she comes across as not a real strong lover either. She kind of comes across as like a waif. Like somebody who's like, oh, I'm all messed up. Like, in other words, he wants to fix her and she needs somebody who's going to fix her. And so this is why, to me, that relationship dynamic was super creepy.
Yeah.
Because I was like, we're not talking about, like, I had a friend of mine who was going on 50 and he dated a 28-year-old. Okay. Now, that would have been fine if the 28-year-old was a relatively stable adult 28-year-old, maybe would have still been a little green about life, but would have been responsible. No, this 28-year-old was about the emotional maturity level of about 19. So watching, yes, thank you. Watching that was disgusting. It was like, why are you doing? Well, she's only like, you know, 17 years younger than me or whatever the hell. I can't do math. But I was like, but that's gross. However, had she been a 28-year-old that was well-developed and, well, you know, and had a good job and was stable and kind of had her shit together, then she might have appeared old enough to be with this man who was in his early 50s. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And that was my problem. Had she come across as a real, like, kind of go-getter and had her shit together – I don't think I would have been grossed out by that. But their relationship dynamic in the couple scenes we saw, it was really weird. It was like, oh, I'm your daddy. I'm going to take care of you. Oh, here's a gun. It was like, oh, God, this is.
Yeah. Well, there's also the fact that, you know, this guy is, you know, he doesn't really seem to really take take his trauma very seriously. I mean, if she, you know, the very fact he's going to leave her alone with these kids. Who are clearly resentful of her for several days, when he has to be there to kind of, beforehand to be there to moderate the whole situation, he's just kind of not taking this shit seriously enough. He just thinks it's just going to let it sort itself out, you know? It's his big plan to try to get them all together into this place that was originally for where the mother would be with them and stuff like that. It was their family staying place. The hangout.
Well, and I also got I'm sorry, I got you off.
Oh, I was sorry. I was also just going to say that, you know, he just kind of feels like he reminds me of the husband from Swallow. He's trying to let those kids and Grace settle the problem for him rather than do it himself.
Well, and I got the impression that
if
the mother had not committed suicide, that he was going to be perfectly fine letting the kids stay with her and just fucking off with his new young wife. So I don't.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree.
I don't know. I don't think we learned enough about either parent to really know. I mean,
my impression, Phil. My impression.
Well, I just want to say that. As we all know, at least in the United States, the wife usually gets the children almost 90-something percent of the time. So I don't think the husband, whether he wanted the kids or not, would ever look at the idea that he was going to get the kids. So he was probably expecting his entire life that he was just going to get them, you know, weekends and a couple of day evenings or something like that. Like most fathers do when there's a separation between parents. As an individual, your perspective I that's fair. I just don't see how we've seen enough of his character and his background to really even be able to answer that.
Well, I think the problem is
it doesn't really matter. The point, and it's the same for both of what we're saying, so it doesn't really matter. The point is that he was not expecting to take on this parental role, which he's now had shoved upon him.
Right. I think here's the thing. They don't, again, as I said repeatedly, they have not given background on any of these characters outside of Grace. And so we're left to piece things together. And I can't blame the father for what happens to the mother necessarily without having more information. Right. I don't know how he treated her previously. I don't know what that backstory is. But he handles this horribly. Right?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, he handles this horribly.
He really does. Here's my other question.
It shows someone who is not putting his children's welfare above his own.
Absolutely.
He has postponed. He said, we're going to get married in September. Fine. First of all, he breaks rule number one of the dating code, which is you don't stick your dick in crazy. Number one.
Yep.
So there's that. Number two, I'm sure there has to be an ethical issue here where he's going around interviewing people and interviewing subjects, and he finds this girl who is a traumatized victim of a cult, and he decides, hey, well, you want to go get some pizza afterwards?
Well, yeah.
So I think this is a better choice than my wife. But then the fact that after this happens, that's all preamble. But it's we don't know what happened before, but I think a big clue is the fact that he then comes in. He has postponed this 3 months from September to December. He was going to get married September. He's now in December. He's basically trying to force this on the kids. Anyone with common sense, anyone with any, you know, who knows anything about grieving, if he had talked to anybody about how long will a child, now, first of all, a child is going to grieve for the parent the rest of their life. There's that. But you need, most people need a year, right, to really let that, them be ready to move on. And for him to be trying to push her on the kids, both is unfair to her and unfair to the kids. You know, there needs to be space there. She's not in a place where she can, because of her background, where she could say, you know what, it's too soon, don't put me here. You know, it's unfair to her, it's unfair to the children. He has allowed this to happen because he is just looking at this, or the sense I get is, I put this off for 3 months, that's enough. You know, how much longer do I have to put my life on hold because the mother of my children committed suicide? And
so
that's where I get
the sense. If he postponed it 3 months, it would have been better?
No. Basically, what should have happened is the wedding is off until further notice. Let the children.
I don't know if that's fair.
No. Just until further notice, Phil. Children, in other words, he did not put his children first.
Right.
And as the daughter of a widower, right, because my mother died first, as much as my dad really screwed up a lot of stuff, there's one thing I got to say for my father, and that is, believe me, lots of women came after him after my mother died, and he literally was like, no, I have children. I need to take care of my kids. And even though he messed up in a lot of ways, he was a single dad. He didn't know it was the freaking early 80s, you know, whatever. He would not date another woman. And I remember saying to him when I was like 17, so this is a few years beyond my mother's death. And I said, Dad, it's okay if you want to date another woman. Like, me and the kids talked about this, and the kids were young. And I said, you know, would you be okay? And we had talked about it, and we wanted our dad to be happy. And he literally said, no, I'm not comfortable with that. I want you guys to grow up and do your thing, and then I'll think about it later. You are the most important thing in my life right now. And so seeing a father in this movie doing this shit was just I don't even understand you.
I got to defend the two of the characters then here. Because,
right, but right. See, but here's the other thing, though, too. He said, I want to make the divorce final to the mother. And the weakness there to me is that, okay, now he's decided to marry somebody else. So essentially the reason he's pushing this, pardon me, is because he's too much of a fucking loser to handle life with his two kids on his own. He needs a substitute. So for whatever reason, he ditched his wife. We don't know. It's true. we don't know what her deal is. He's not strong enough. He's taking the Alka-Seltzer right in the first scene, which tells you that he's torn up all the time and can't function right there. So,
or he knows he has to tell something to someone that he knows isn't going to like it.
But he didn't expect her to commit suicide, which is also kind of interesting to me because I'm like, okay, he clearly didn't expect his wife was unstable enough to commit suicide. Otherwise, he wouldn't have told her. Right? So, yeah.
Yeah, but
a lot of interesting stuff going on here.
I have to disagree with everything here. I mean, first of all, I don't necessarily think this woman, obviously, she's damaged and she's had nightmares because of a nightmare life up to the age of 12.
Well, we're not blaming her, Phil. We're blaming him for putting her in that position.
No.
I'm trying to defend two people here. So her being quote unquote damaged, I don't think is necessarily a fair to say. Obviously at the end, when all the perfect storm happens, there you go. All right. But I don't think calling her damaged or crazy is correct. And for the father,
then why is he on medication?
Well, people have behavioral health issues. You can say alcoholics, but they're not crazy. People just have behavioral health issues, and they're on medication.
Okie dokie. All right.
I think you're splitting hairs.
I'm not calling people that are behavioral health crazy. They're not crazy.
When you have someone that has grown up through child abuse, they've been damaged.
Right, damaged, but they're not crazy. And the father,
oh, but
the
Phil, father, can't hold it together without your medication, then crazy is not a politically correct term. You said
they have a medical issue. Drug users aren't drug users. They're people who have a medical disease. They have
crazy
a disease.
Is a medical issue too, Phil.
Phil, behavioral health individuals. What is wrong? Yeah, we're.
All right,
she's
so
back
I
doodle.
So I have to disagree and to call people who have behavioral health issues crazy, first of all. Second, the father absolutely made a lot of missteps. But we've seen hundreds of people in the real world that move on. They get married. Not every father is like Christie's. They date people. You know, not every mother's like other people's mothers, and they date another man. I mean, it just happens. So he's made missteps, but he's not the evil person that you guys are portraying.
No one's saying evil, but he's self-centered. 100%. He's self-centered.
That's fair.
He is not putting his kids first. He is not a great dad. He is pushing his kids on this woman who has her behavioral health issues, who has her own emotional traumas she's still clearly working through. And he knows that because that's literally how he found her.
No, you know? he found her because she was the survivor of the cult that he was doing research.
That's right. That's the point.
Right.
She didn't come out a healthy, well-adjusted cult member.
Right. I think what we're trying to say here, Phil, is not that we disagree with you because, yes, people do move on. Yeah. They do need other people. That is all. In fact, that's what we wanted my dad to do, and he wouldn't. We're not judging that.
But what happens if your father did date people?
But my father, being the man he would have been, probably would have said, kids, I'm dating this other woman. I'm giving it time. Now, I also have friends who are divorced or who, you know, lost husbands, believe it or not, when they're young. And they gave it there is no prescribed amount of time. But what there is time to let the your children heal a little bit before you go springing that.
Oh, I'm
on
not
them.
Disagreeing with you. I said he made a lot of missteps. I have agreed. Really? However, I'm just saying he's not the devil at everybody was
too. And what
nobody
I'm
was calling
ask,
him the devil, Phil. No. Nobody said he was the devil. Stop being defensive. I don't know what's going on. We're not saying it's the dad's fault. We're saying he used terrible judgment.
Yeah, bad decisions.
Very bad judgment. And the thing is, too, I really questioned, and that was another question I had for all of you guys because I want to see what you think. I was really seriously questioning. I tried to put myself in that guy's shoes, the father's shoes, and be like, you know, I don't know if I would leave my children and this girl where they're all three of them are clearly or alone for a week. I was really questioning that motive and what the motive was for that, because that is not something.
Well, I think Abe summed it up, which is he didn't know how to do it, so he was trying to force them to do it themselves.
That's really shitty, though.
I think it's shitty too. All right, we can assume the guy has known Grace for a long time, so. So we're assuming that he doesn't think Grace is a problem. And to be honest, if the kids didn't do what they did, there wouldn't have been a problem. So the problem occurred was when the kids decided to use her behavioral health issues against her.
Yes.
And that was where the problem began. And the father is at fault partly for all that, because he shouldn't allow that to occur. Because of all the missteps that you guys have discussed.
It was so many bad decisions on his part. And, you know, poor Grace, you know, depending how far she came, those scars were very thin.
Yes.
You
know? Scars were very, very deep. Scars were very deep, yeah.
And all it would take was just a slight little cut to get them bleeding again.
Yeah.
And that's what
this is more than a slight little cut, dude.
What I'm saying is, it's almost like her scars are. It's almost like she's a hemophiliac psychologically. If it was a little cut, such a whole bleeding sensation that she cannot stop without her medication.
I agree, but again, I don't. If even if she hadn't taken the medication, she was drugged by them. The dog got killed. They took all the food. They allowed the pipes to freeze. I mean, we're talking about the worst you could do to a human being. So that is a behavioral health, has to be behavioral health issues. So it's not like they were just scabs. They literally stabbed her with swords.
Oh no, I'm saying they opened up old wounds that she already had.
Dude, if that was my dog, I would have killed him too.
Then it's back to the dog.
Yeah, back to the dog.
Damn right.
I don't think anyone's justifying what the kids did.
No.
What the kids did was nobody was terrible.
Nobody's defending that.
The kids are clearly in need of serious therapy themselves. They have been through a horrible trauma.
Yes.
They have a father that doesn't seem to know how to handle it.
Yep.
And he puts them in the hands of someone who really is not mentally and emotionally equipped to deal with it. She's trying her best. I think we all admit that given how she was framed at the very beginning of the film, and that she's this ghostly presence that Chrissy talked, she ends up being a relatively lovely person.
She's trying her damnedest.
Because I think we're all expecting her to go either Kathy Bates in Misery or something at the beginning of the film.
Or be a devil worshiper or something.
Yeah, and she doesn't. Yeah. She totally does her best.
And I think that Phil is right, that if the kid hadn't taken her medicine away from her, it probably would have been okay.
And she might have figured out that the kids were fucking with her.
Yeah.
Because, again, part of the kid's brilliance in this is that her head isn't in the right space, and so she maybe can't think through things through logically, and so it succeeds beyond their wildest imagination. Where if they did this with someone who is sane... I'm going to have to go with Abe as the member of the group here. If they're going to do this, if they did this to Abe, Abe would probably go, "Fuck you! We're not stop this horse shit. Where'd you hide everything?"
Oh yeah, right? I would have had to figure that, you know, and also because of the fact if I suspected them of hiding shit there, you know, because if I'm starting to get hungry and they're doing just fine, there's something fucking wrong. Because I'm guessing, this poor woman.
Yeah, they got the SpaghettiOs under the bed.
Exactly, they're secretly eating while she's suddenly getting famished and dehydrating and shit like that. I'd be wondering how the fuck are you still standing while I'm barely holding on here, and I'd be checking every nook and cranny. I also had the question, you know, why the fuck did they let a dog run outside of all places in the middle of a winter wonderland of hell?
Have you ever had a pet?
Yes, hundreds of dogs.
I have a bunch of pets, but I always make sure they
You've had hundreds of dogs, Phil?
No, Abe has.
Abe, you are a bad owner.
Abe, know, what are you doing with hundreds of dogs?
How do they taste?
No, the point is Abe has dogs and cats. He knows how to, yes. He knows if you walk the dog down the street when it's 12 degrees, their paws are going to hurt.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember, like, one time, one summer, I had to pick up one of the dogs because it was getting too hot for them. I didn't want to get burnt. But, you know, even if at that age, you know, you should let a dog run out into a place with no fence or anything like that. Because that area is just a big fucking wilderness. Right. You know?
Well, they didn't do it on purpose.
The thing is, it was still careless not to, you know, figure that out.
Yes, it was.
Amen. Amen.
It was careless to let the dog run away. Absolutely.
The whole, these kids were, oh my God, I hate them. Hate.
It was so funny. I've read comics and reviews and some people who just completely condemned the kids for the dog alone. Everything else, they kind of like passed, but it was the dog alone.
Oh, no.
I
think these kids were sociopaths.
What's wrong with all of you?
I think that there's Clay Bowden and Harris, right, Mike? He's Harris. That kid. He's a scumbag. He was a. This kid's a psychopath.
Here's another point I wanted to bring up, though, Phil, and you know everybody that we were talking about the kids being sick, and like I said, I would have needed to see a little bit more justification. But aside from the terrible grief and the unbelievable rage that is within them because their mother killed herself, I think based on the little bit that I saw of the father's detached behavior and the mother and the way that she was kind of sobbing and unstable and then killed herself also tells me just from inference that perhaps neither parent was very well adjusted either.
I agree. I think both parents
and so therefore
had
the kids would have inherited it from them. So not only are they disadvantaged because they are compromised due to their grief and their recent loss and the fact that they are, you know, basically victims of childhood trauma because they're young enough. The other thing you deal with is that when you have a childhood trauma happen to you in your formative years like that, it does permanent damage that very often is, I wish there was a better word than this, but irreparable. Okay, it's irreparable. It is so deep that it is irreparable. They will never recover from that, even if they get the proper counseling and the proper care. Plus, now you're looking at the dad who's like, you know, obviously worthless. The mother probably had significant mental health issues, maybe even during their whole marriage.
I don't know if the father was.
No, I think he was pretty shut down and worthless. He was not, I would have to say, he wasn't even trying. Like, he was so all about him, he wasn't even making an effort.
Well, we didn't
actually
apologize. They skipped.
We're not talking about you,
head.
Phil.
No,
we're not talking about Phil.
I'm not that type of person. But my point is they're skipping 6 months ahead. We don't know what happened in that 6 months to see if the father. We don't know if the father's a good father. He's not in the film much with the kids. There's like two scenes and that's it. We don't know.
But I mean, I think that might have been the point. If the filmmakers wanted us to see that he was a good dad, right? Because when you're a writer, right, Phil, or you're an artist or you're a filmmaker, you need your characters, you need the audience to be able to sympathize or empathize with your characters, right? Even if they don't like the characters, they need to empathize with them. I truly feel that there was lot of opportunity for us to even feel bad for this guy. Like, we didn't really see anything redeeming in him. I didn't, anyway. Do something that's redeeming. You know, he didn't.
No, he felt like more of like an agent of change who basically sets the main plot for our three main characters to be in the situation they are.
So you mean like a plot device, or do you mean like catalyst?
A catalyst and plot device in one. Basically, because everything he does in the beginning of the movie is what gets that situation rolling.
It's both a catalyst and a plot device.
Well, no, that does make sense. I could give you that.
Well, we don't know. Again, this has nothing to do with me supporting a character, and I identify with a character, Mike. The point is that we don't know if the mother that suicided, if she was a crazy or she was angry or she, who knows. We don't know anything about the woman except for 2 minutes in the film. She blows her brains out, so obviously she's unstable. So the marriage may have been in the shitter anyway, and so he dumped her and he moved on. It's an unfortunate thing, but these things happen in real life. Everybody's seen divorces.
Yeah, but I
haven't had any divorces with my parents or me, but my brother has. So it just happens.
I think what they have told – they haven't told us a lot, and you're absolutely right, and we said that. So mm-hmm. what you have to do is latch on to what they have told you and what they have showed you with the character and how the character has acted in the times that we've seen him, because that's what we have to go by. And I'm not going to extrapolate.
Right, he made a lot of mistakes.
But I think he's there was enough there to show he's going through his midlife crisis or something, where he is being very, very self-centered at a time when his children need him. And that is his real sin.
It is not a sin
that should cause all the shit that happened there. That's all. This is a great example of where nobody is in the place where they should be to stop this all from happening.
Yes, yes, totally. As they used to say in the opening to that TV show I love, Seconds from Disaster, disasters don't just happen. They are a chain of deadly events.
A lot of people get divorced, right? So someone falls out of love and they break up the marriage and gone. The other person usually doesn't blow their brains out. So obviously the mother was had many issues if she's to the point where she blew her brains out. So that being the case, we don't know. We're not responsible for a suicide of someone else. Everybody's had a girlfriend or a boyfriend that says, if you leave me, I'm going to kill myself. It's like, you're not responsible. You know, if you say fuck you, I'm gone. I'm not dealing with this.
I don't think anybody's trying to say that he's responsible for the mother's suicide.
Yeah,
not saying that he's responsible for everything that happens in the movie. What we are saying is that when the mother commits suicide, he should have taken a moment to say, "Hey, this changes everything.
Yes,
let's alter plans a little bit."
And he did not.
And I'm not disagreeing with any of that. Absolutely. Like I said, he made missteps.
Yes. And that's just the point. That's the point that we're trying to make. On another note.
And as you said, Chrissy, too, he may have had his own behavioral health issues, which is possible. He had to be the fathery or mothery figure to people who are damaged, possibly. He could have been. I mean, he's definitely a quiet soul. So he's one of those deep thinkers.
And the other thing that I found interesting about his character, Phil, what little we know about him, is that he wrote a book. He did extensive research on this particular cult, or maybe other cults, right?
Yep.
So he clearly has an interest or a passion for this type of phenomenon where people sort of become brainwashed, where people don't really know who they are, which also sort of speaks to the possibility that he may not have a strong sense of identity. I mean, this is, we can play armchair fucking psychologist all night, but it's the kind of shit that really interests me in a movie is like, how many little details do they give me to compose this person?
You could look at his character's interest in the cult being a couple of things. And one of them could be is exactly what you just said. Another one could be he is interested in cults in general because they're kind of interesting to watch.
Right, because maybe he had or maybe he had traumatic experiences with the church. Now, I also found it interesting.
Or like Mike, saw Jaws as a kid, so he wanted to be in biology. He saw the Jim Jones on TV when he was a kid. And he goes, this is the weirdest thing. And he just got into it. Who knows? Yep.
I have another question. I thought that the funeral of the mother
First of all, I did want to comment, and I don't know if you guys said it, that suicide scene with her was stunning. Oh, I did not see that comment. I thought that was awesome.
Well,
the strongest point in the movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
go ahead,
Abel. Well, let Chrissy finish it.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Chrissy. Yep.
I was just going to say, the black balloons in front of the cross, does anybody have, like, comments about that? Because I'm still trying to figure out what that meant.
Yeah, we
talked about that. Did you cover that earlier? Okay, you can tell me after.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, if you have any thoughts on it too, but we just basically said that.
I'll go back and listen to the episode when you guys tape it, and then I'll hear what you guys think. So it's fine. We don't have to waste time on that. I was just curious. That's all. I can hear it later. All right. So, I mean, that's kind of, I think that's all I really have, except that I love the atmosphere in this. And I really also appreciate how they manipulated you into thinking for a moment or two that might have actually been her that was doing it.
Right.
Remember the kids were like, oh, you're sleepwalking. We hear you walking around at night. That was like so cool. Right. It's like, ooh, is it maybe her? That was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it was all a scam. They, she probably wasn't sleepwalking. They were just saying shit to, you know, part of the plan. What about the ending? I'm glad they went there. I mean, I was devastated that they killed the father. That was terrible. But once she became insane and was gone and she wasn't coming back and she was a murderer and all that, even if unintentional, I was glad they went where they went at the end, where the kids couldn't get away. I was very happy. Because first of all, it's dark.
They're reaping the rewards of their plan.
Pretty much.
Well, and also, the father... not the father, but the cult, you know, who clearly it was her father who was the leader of the cult, I think,
yes,
said, you know, you must pay for your sins and all that, and you must pass on the message. So in a way, her destiny has come full circle because she is now passing on the message about sin.
Right.
Live with
she
sin.
Became the father. She became
everything has come full circle pretty much.
Yeah. Which I thought was really well done. I mean... Right. Yeah.
Well, right. I was, you know what? This is a smart screenplay because I was thinking the exact same thing when the kids ran out and got in the car. I said, they better get it stuck in a snowbank. And sure enough, they did. And I was like, yes, that was a great screenplay plot point device. And then when she went out there and brought him in with the and sat him down and put the masking tape or whatever.
The tape. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is another place where I had a little bit of suspension of disbelief, which is I don't know. He's a roughly 15 or 16 year old boy, right? He's old enough that he can try to drive the car, but not old enough that he knows what the fuck he's doing with it.
Right.
And he's not handling. But if you look at the boy next to her, he is taller than she is.
You forgot one thing, Mike, and it's
what?
No matter what. The gun. Whoever has the gun wins.
Yeah, but she put the gun on the way. She actually put the gun down on the table when she walked behind them, and they weren't tied to the chairs.
Oh, and
weren't they?
By the way,
no, they weren't.
They were.
No, yeah. They were.
Now there were. He had opportunities there, and he did because she didn't have the gun the entire time. When she came up the stairs, she had the gun. You know, but. You know, there were moments that he would have had a physical advantage over her.
Had the gun.
Not the entire time. But that also I want to point out, I know this was an issue we had brought up. I wish I could remember what film it was. I'm pretty sure it was one we had discussed on Dark Discussions.
I don't know.
Where the security code to the box was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember that. Yeah.
There was a movie that we did where the kid goes on, like, gets the dad's gun. And I don't know what the code was that the dad used, whether it was like 0000 or 1234. But it was another one of those things where it was a ridiculously simple code for the kid to get the gun out of the lockbox. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was commenting on that. I wish I could remember. I remember discussing it somewhere. Maybe I discussed it on Facebook. I naturally just assume everything I've discussed has been here. I'm just saying, this is a family. Nobody in this family should be allowed to own firearms, ever. It's a little late now.
I'm not disagreeing.
Right, well, yeah.
In the defense of the kid not fighting for, You got to remember, these kids just watched their father get his brains blown out.
So yeah, and you got to get that
at 100% as far as reasoning and capabilities.
But we also know now that how they got on the father's computer, because clearly he had his password was password.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I know.
QWERTY. Yeah. But the thing is the new thing in movies, especially horror and thrillers, is the final girl or the kid or the weak man suddenly becomes superheroes. In real life, after having traumatic experiences like seeing your father's brains, you know, brains get blown out, a lot of people won't fight back, and they're the defeatists at that point. So I know it's trendy now to have them be Superman, because that's what they do now in horror films and thrillers, because it's probably the times that we're in. But in real life, I think this is more realistic, where the kids are still scared and crying and don't know what to do, and they just accept their fate, hoping that maybe the person will change their mind.
Yeah,
but it's just me.
This is a rare occasion on which I agree with Phil.
What do you mean, Eric? We agree all the time, don't we?
Okie dokie.
We don't agree? Are you serious?
I think we disagree more than we agree usually.
Oh. Well, a lot of times we play devil's advocate against each other, but I didn't know if it was serious or not.
Oh, actually, you're just wrong a lot.
Why the heck are you picking on me, Eric? I thought we were buddies. Jesus. Son of a bitch. Anyway, the dog gets vengeance. That's all that matters.
The dog is dead. The dog didn't get
anything. Well, you're right. You're right. But the children get the death penalty for killing the dog. So that's all right in my book.
Oh, boy.
Another reason I'm glad Phil's not in charge.
No one wants to be in charge, Eric, because it's... Because then you get the trolls. You get the trolls.
You have trolls anyway.
All you have to do is be on social media and everybody has trolls.
Exactly. Yep.
It's a terrible place. Let's see. All right. Anything else? Anybody want to bring up anything? Anyone?
I want to say it's just something about the filmmakers. I like Goodbye, Mommy. Goodnight, Mommy. Better than this. I did not realize, I might have known it when we talked about it in the preview podcast, but I lose track of these things because there's so many movies, and there's been one or two other things that have happened in the last few months to occupy my mind. But I didn't realize while watching this was the Goodnight Mommy people. The Goodnight Mommy people have now used the dead people who don't know they're dead trope in two films in a row. They've done a twist on it each time.
At least they didn't have the is the person exist or not? Thank God they didn't have that.
Yeah. Right.
Actually, no, they did do that, right? Because that's the twist in Goodnight Mommy.
Spoiler. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying at least this film didn't have it.
Right. Yeah. They did a different twist on that, right? In Goodnight Mommy, though, before anyone says, you know, it is very obvious that's the thing, and I think one reason a lot of people criticize the film is that they figured out the twist. I think you have to know that and see that ahead of time to get what the film is doing and get some of the shocks later on. It's the realization that somebody's not right in the head, you know, is you know, why the film is allowed to kind of go where it goes later on. But they need to find something other than this kind of trope. In their next film, is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, they should go elsewhere. Absolutely, I think they're going to stick with the art house feel because that's what they do. It seems.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think they're doing like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, that's fine, but maybe next movie don't have any kids in it.
That's true.
I have a really dumb question. So the guys who did this were the same people who did Goodnight Mommy?
A man and a woman, yeah. It's a combo.
Oh, yeah. So clearly they're both... Okay, so this is their, like, theme that they're going to rehash and rehash and rehash until they ever...
Two movies. Mm-hmm. It's two movies. I think we're extrapolating a little bit.
Yeah.
There are two movies about children and a mother figure...
only,
and it doesn't end
two
well.
Movies, only two.
That's a fair point.
Well,
two.
No, but Eric, no, my point was not to be critical. My point was just to say that, and if I sounded that way, I didn't mean it that way. I know it in my own work. There are several themes that I work with over and over and over, and several scenarios that I work with over and over and over. And usually what that indicates is the creator, the writer, the artist, whatever, because that is as, art is as much therapeutic as it is reaching out to others and telling a story. The secret is to just make it entertaining. So it could be that this couple, these people that are making these films, like Good Night, Mommy, and this, they may be exploring different areas of their own private personal damage in different ways, and they will keep working with those themes until they
Yeah, but
it's okay though. But this is what no.
You got to remember,
artists,
though.
Dolly again, did it. I mean,
everybody did it. You're kind of wrong, though, because you got to remember the screenwriter is different than the director in many cases. And here, the original script was not theirs. So,
They chose the script to do.
I wasn't trying to be critical
or say, well, these people suck or whatever. I didn't realize it was a different screenwriter. I thought it was the same screenwriter and the same director. That's why I said that. I did not realize it was two.
Well, what it is is they took the script and then they then got screen credits because they edited pieces, so their fingerprints are all over the script, even if it's not their script.
Okay, and, yeah, that makes sense.
Point two, which is they may have chose the script because it's something that they're interested in. But, and anyway, these whole type of films are their wheelbarrow, maybe. One thing I wanted to say that is the credits are the best because every last name in the credits at that rolls by at the end are all French. It's wonderful.
Okay.
Thank God, Bill. Because that was fucking
French Canadian.
That's even better. That's worse.
That everybody that was associated with this film was like American or German or English or something, I was just done. I was out. I was like, unless they're French Canadians, I'm totally out.
There's like Robitaille, which is a name in my family tree. Scott here and Desjardins.
Nobody cares.
Lambert.
No one cares.
Eric, as I texted you last night, little things like this entertain me. It's wonderful.
And know what the French people did, Phil? They killed the fucking dog.
Those
French people signed off on a movie where they let a dog die in the cold. And here you are celebrating them in their freaking French Canadian heritage.
Speaking of the dog, Grady the dog was played by Wally. So Wally played great. Just for
Wally.
That's right.
Wally died for our sins.
That's true. That's true.
Thank God they didn't eat his flesh.
Right. They got Roua. There's another one going by now. Yeah, there's a lot of good names here. Chouinier. Yeah, Pétion.
I do have one thing related to the movie that I just want to mention quickly before we wrap up.
Pelletier.
Which is that if you enjoy the movie Jaws, as I do, they're about to release it on 4K. And they did a tremendous job of restoring the movie for the Blu-ray version. And now they're putting it in 4K with HDR and a Dolby Atmos soundtrack. And I'm very excited about it. So if you have those things and those letters mean something to you, you should be excited too.
Right.
Well,
if you want
this. And it's a big difference because I remember I used to watch Jaws on VHS a lot. And then I got my very first Blu-ray, or actually, was it Blu-ray? No, my very first DVD was Jaws. And, you know, it was a little better. And then I got the Blu-ray like a year ago because it was like, you know, $10 now or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can see almost everything of the naked chick at the beginning where you couldn't in all the other prior versions. So that's how much.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the thing. If you hear the click, click, clicking of a fishing reel
and then the zipping of a line quickly being pulled in. That is not Quint fishing for a shark. It is Universal Studios pulling Eric Webster in to buy yet another version of Jaws.
Hey, I did not give a shit. Hey, I will give them my money gladly.
Oh, wait, so did wait. I. Don't get me wrong. And I don't even have a 4K TV yet.
Yeah, if I had a 4K, I would be buying that because I literally have every single release of Jaws they ever did on film. Well, I have original VHS. I still have all that shit. Every new edition, I've got it. At least in the United States, I have it. So
the lengths they went through to restore it for the Blu-ray are really kind of incredible. They have a little 8-minute documentary about it on YouTube. You can just search for Jaws restoration and you'll find it quickly.
So is this 4K set? Is it just 4K or do they also have a disc with the regular Blu-ray?
Well, you can get the Blu-ray anyway. I'm not entirely sure. I know they have some of the same special features that are on the Blu-ray, so that might be on its own Blu-ray disc, but I don't remember seeing it specifically mentioned.
All right, I'll have to check it out because even though I don't have a 4K, I might have to get it just to make sure my collection is totally complete because I even have it on Laserdisc.
Now, speaking of other horror films, you got to give this movie The Lodge dibs for playing clips from The Thing. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Right. Well, also, by the way, another red herring.
Then it was Jack Frost. Yep.
Yeah. And the film had gone so far off the rails.
It wasn't the horror film Jack Frost. It was the funny Jack Frost.
Yeah, right.
Think about what those two films were about, right? They're both set in the wintertime, so there's that. But one film is about paranoia, right? Yep. But one of us is not who we seems to be, mm-hmm. right? So that's sort of misdirecting us into waiting for Grace to turn out to be the psycho killer or possessed or whatever. And then there's the other one, which, of course, is about a dead parent coming back to life, which is playing into is this mom coming back and her ghost, right? They're talking about the walking through the halls at night and the constant shots of, let's say, the little the shrine tour and the doll and the hat and
they had sea monkeys.
They had sea monkeys,
which I don't know how that had to do with anything. Yes.
Well, actually, I was thinking about that, and the sea monkeys are really a symbolism of...
Oh, my God!
The sea monkeys, too? Really?
Yeah. No, they are a symbol of burgeoning childhood, right? That is the... Usually, or in the old days, maybe not now, but 100 years ago, sea monkeys were the first pet you had, really. Right? Your parents would get you sea monkeys or goldfish or something, right? So that you could learn the idea of responsibility,
and
right?
Death.
Yeah, and death and all that shit. So it makes sense. I mean, that actually to me was a symbol of lost innocence.
What about this? I love the scene where Grace, and you still think Grace may be a little malevolent, but not really, after you find out what happens. She steals the doll from the girl, and then she does it on purpose because she was having a talk with her earlier saying, what do you want for Christmas? And she says she wants a dog, and that's how she says, oh, that's Grady for myself and all that other stuff. So she takes the doll and hides it in the dog's bed. So when they start looking for the doll, they eventually land up to the bed, and you know she obviously intended it because she says, let's go look in the hall area. And she goes, nah, I never go in the hall. I wouldn't go in there. And she goes, yeah, but let's just look. And then like, oh, look, Grady must have took it. And then, you know, hoping for her to start patting the dog and then, you know, maybe a connection with the girl because, you know, Grady's my dog, but since I'm going to be living with you as your stepmom, Grady's your dog too, you know. But it didn't work out. But you got to give her credit.
But instead the girl was like, that motherfucking dog stole my doll. It's dead.
Yeah, I was honestly expecting that to happen. Like the girl was going to take revenge on the dog for stealing the doll.
Yeah.
That was definitely something I was expecting to happen.
Well, and that's another interesting thing.
I told you that.
We were talking about the idea of sort of emotional damage, right? Mental health issues. This girl from the beginning, before the mother was killed, this girl was very attached to her dolls. And it is kind of a well-known thing. There have been studies done on it. I mean, think about it. When little kids get sexually assaulted, they give them a doll, right? So when you're that obsessed with a particular doll as a child, it has come to, at least in pop culture, right, mean that you are emotionally distancing yourself from whatever's happening. You're emotionally distancing yourself from reality because she eats it and gives the doll food.
Right,
but she gives the doll food, right? There's that one scene. She's always got the doll in her hands. The doll really is, with children who are traumatized, the doll can become their way of detaching from the trauma that's happening around them.
Before
her mother passed, she had the doll. Now, that could have been, we don't know. Maybe she was obsessed with the dolls way before the parents even split up.
But the point is that it affected
her enough that she used these dolls as a vehicle for emotional detachment from reality and from her world. Yeah. Yes.
And the doll almost symbolized almost like a piece of her past to her mother. I mean, because it's dressed with the red hat and everything like that.
She tried to have the doll fly away in the balloon and all that stuff too.
And the very last time we see with the doll, it's burning.
Yes, that's very interesting. Which again is another symbol.
That was
lost.
Kind of awesome.
Well, and it's lost again. It's lost innocence. You know, the symbolism of that doll burning is not only lost innocence, it also exposes symbolically the little girl for being the evil that she is, right? Because a doll is a symbol of, okay, not only was the doll her emotional distance vehicle from reality, now this little girl really sees reality for what it is, and she no longer needs that doll, and that's why it's burning. I mean, symbolically, you know, if you think about it that way, but yeah.
Right. It's like a binky, the Linus's blanket or something.
I was just about to say that.
See, Eric, we think alike. I'm telling you, dude.
Phil.
We agree. Phil,
I think we all need a binky.
Someone's going to have trouble getting
your binky.
What was the insult that you said, Mike? Because I know it's always an insult.
I said somebody's going to have trouble getting sleep.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go get the old Robin, Disney's Robin Hood owl that my parents bought for me at Disney parks that was so puked on so many times he has no fur left.
Oh Lord!
Well,
I think I will call him.
You know what, Grace's binky was Grady the dog.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so with
all right, let's wrap it up.
I was saying I was trying to lead us towards wrapping this up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. So let's give our final thoughts. Let's give our final thoughts. So I will do the same order as we did before. So I'll start. This movie was the best film ever. This is probably going to be my favorite film of the year for horror. It was awesome. It was fantastic. I was glad they didn't go supernatural. I like these dark, depressing kind of dramas that got slow like this, and it hit, as Mike said, my wheelbarrows of cult films and anyway,
you're gonna go to one socket and park the cars side by each too or what?
Either way, this film is awesome. I thought it was a big improvement over their prior film, good whatever mummy, and it'll be possibly the best film of the year. I'm gonna have to still think it over, but it'll definitely be in the top five. Big thumbs up. And we go to Mike.
Yeah, I liked the film. I thought it was well made. I did think it was interesting. I just didn't find it compelling. It is certainly worth a watch. Again, if you're somebody who's listening to this podcast, you definitely should give it at least one shot, because it depends on where it is on your gamut of dark discussion genre categories you want to put it in. I have no trouble with this being a horror film, given that it starts with a suicide, ends with a woman going crazy and killing her boyfriend and basically torturing two children, which, you know, so a happy ending.
But even so, it kind of works for me in that regard. I mean, this does go past where, like, Steel Magnolias or something would do if it was just a drama. So I would certainly, I'm certainly fine with being in, you know, putting the horror category if somebody doesn't want to put in the horror category. It's all arbitrary. I don't care. But certainly would like to hear, you know, your thoughts on it when you get a chance to watch it, if you have Hulu.
Yeah, or VOD. DarkDiscussions at AOL.com and give us your thoughts. Or write it on the Facebook group page, too. But if you send it to the email, we'll read it on the podcast. Eric?
Yeah, I liked it more than Mike, less than Phil. I think this is a very well-made movie. I consider it a dark drama. And yeah, so it's a slow burn. So some younger audience members might have a little issue with the pacing. But it is an exceptionally made film, and I recommend it for people who like slow burns.
Abe.
All right. So this was an interesting watch. I'm not sure what it's going to rank. I think for the most part, my experience was very positive. I thought the performances of the cast were very strong. Riley Keough really did a great job. I think the character of Grace was a very tragic and compelling figure. I thought the lighting effects and the music were really cool, the way it was shot. It's a very slow burn film, and it's not going to be for everyone. And it's, you know, it takes a while to really kick off. But that's going to, I think, at the same time, it's going to vary from person to person. But so I would say at least give it a chance, even if you're more into the more faster-paced story. It's a faster-paced story, something like that. This is still a good film. But, you know, it's going to be up to you. Check it out. It's out right now. And, yeah, that's all I have to say.
All right. Chrissy?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was refreshing just because it had twists and turns that I was not really expecting. I really enjoyed figuring out the mystery. I love the atmosphere. I think even as far as like single effect, I think they did really well with like the atmosphere, the score in particular. The score is almost this like rural like string feeling, which is sort of suggestive of the whole idea of lack of identity due to religious cults. It was just very interesting. And I think the acting was great. I love that there were definitely some misdirections in this film, that you didn't know if it was going to be supernatural. You weren't sure if she was crazy at first. You didn't know who was doing what. The only issues I had with it were a couple of nitpicks. So I'm about where Eric is. I would classify it more as a dark drama, but I would classify it more as a dark, intense drama. So it's, for me, it's not quite horror, but maybe that's just because it's so psychologically focused on the idea of grief and what you're really watching here.
Invisibility.
It's a gothic tragedy in the snow. I mean, that's really kind of what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I would, if you like that sort of thing, it's definitely a slow burn, but I am definitely going to give it a recommend. And if you're not sure, you know what, go on to Hulu or wherever you can get it for free, check it out for 15 minutes. If you're not sucked in 15 minutes, then walk away. But it's definitely worth trying, just to see where you stand with it. I think it's worth it.
All right, very good. Yeah, also, if you like the Goodbye Mummy or whatever it was called, you probably would like this, because as Mike mentioned, it's very similar in feel, and that you can tell the filmmakers are kind of, their fingerprints are on both. Riley,
yeah, and this is not light consumption either. So if you're looking for like a good time, this is not it. Like, this is going to make you think. This is dark. So.
Right, yeah.
I just want to throw that out there, because sometimes people just want to watch lighter things, you know. This is not a light thing. Definitely not.
That's correct.
Which is why we're talking about it on Dark Discussions.
There you go. So Riley Keough, possible breakout performance for her career. Maybe she'll finally jump to a true A-lister instead of character actor after this performance. Also, Jaden Martell plays a similar character in Defending Jacob on Apple TV. So if you liked his performance here, you want to probably check that out. It's getting good reviews in Rotten Tomatoes. It was one of the highly anticipated films of the year based off of the festival circuit run that it had. If you have issues about deaths of animals, this film may not be for you, Amy Rain. Also, it's available anywhere for VOD, and as Chrissy and Mike mentioned, Hulu for free if you are a subscriber. So, with all that stated, Eric, why don't you do this out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about The Lodge. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
Stay warm. Thank you.